We live in interesting times, and there is a lot to talk about. You just got the CBS report on the failure of the House of Representatives to pass a health care bill today. A lot more, obviously, to talk about there as that continues. In the meantime, the Senate is still talking about that vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. Neil Gorsuch is the nominee. Here locally, or at least statewide, the North Carolina General Assembly is ostensibly trying, but definitely failing to come up with a bill that enough legislators can get behind to repeal House Bill 2. And in Orange County, we're all concerned about a couple of bills that are going through the General Assembly right now. Again, no word on how far this is going to go in the legislative process, but two bills that would remove Orange County's and local governments in general ability to impose impact fees on developers for school construction that could hurt Orange County to the tune of $3 million or so per year, according to officials that we've talked to over the course of this week. All of that just scraping the tip of the iceberg, but fortunately, we have Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle here in the studio who is going to explain all of it. Thank you for being here today.
I will give you all the solutions in
30
seconds.
Oh, thank goodness. All right. So let's actually start with health care, because I know we said we weren't going to talk about health care, but you brought up a good point during the break before we got started that what's going on in Washington, D.C. is very similar to, or at least sort of appears very similar to, the constant back and forth between Republicans and the General Assembly and their failure to come up with a bill that would repeal HB 2.
Yeah, you know, I think and what's interesting for people who are Democrats is looking at the other party, who really has, you know, they have the majority vote, right? So watching the party, both statewide and nationally, try to come to some consensus so that they can move forward. It's a little frustrating because if you added in the votes of Democrats with those of the Republicans that might side with Democrats, you could get a lot more done. But it's this mentality nationally and statewide that the majority party will make all the decisions irrespective of what the rest of those governing bodies want to do.
Yeah.
And I think to their detriment. Certainly, the reason we're in the one of the reasons we're in the situation we're in with HB 2 is because of the hasty manner in which it was passed. I would, I'm no healthcare expert, but Donald Trump has been president for less than 2 months, and trying to, you know, pass a fix today, it just seems like an awful lot to do in 5 or 6 weeks when, you know, there's an awful lot of other priorities that he has had. And, you know, maybe there needs to be more deliberation and thought given into whatever kind of a overhaul they do of the Affordable Care Act.
And you think about the 2009 and 2010, sort of this equivalent of the beginning of the Trump presidency 8 years ago when it was the start of the Obama presidency. This was, I guess, not priority number one, because priority number one was the stimulus package and doing whatever needed to be done to prevent the economy from falling off the cliff. But this was priority number two, certainly, once we got the stimulus package passed, which was fairly quick, and actually took place before the election of 2008, didn't it?
I think that's right.
So
yes.
By the time Obama gets into office, the stimulus is already taken care of. Healthcare becomes one of the top priorities. That bill, with a 60% Democratic majority in the Senate, so a filibuster-proof majority of Democrats in the Senate if they could get everyone behind, and certainly a clear majority of Democrats in Congress, didn't pass for more than a year because it took them a year to work that out. And this was thrown together. Well, I guess we say thrown together in a couple of months, but Republicans have also been talking about, oh, we've got a plan to repeal and replace for the last 6 years, and clearly they didn't.
They didn't, nor did they believe probably until Election Day in November that the president would be on their side.
Yeah.
And, you know, a president that I'm not sure agrees with the way they would have overhauled the Affordable Care Act. And so, you know, I think that's why we see the bumping of heads. You know, you hear people saying, well, this is just Affordable Care Act light, Obama light, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that, a great many of... Maybe if another Republican had won the presidential election, you know, maybe they would be getting the overhaul of the act they wanted, because they might have a president who was pushing in a more conservative type manner toward changes to that act. But it's not, government moves slowly, and thoughtful legislation takes a while. I mean, this is been going on for many, many years. You know, even think back to when President Clinton was president and, you know, really massive efforts made by Hillary Clinton at the time to try to get something to move forward, and that didn't work.
Yeah, and you go back to, what was it, the Nixon era in the 70s when the same issue came up, and was it Truman who initially proposed something more universal, and that didn't happen in the 40s? I mean, we've been talking about this for closing in on 70 years now, and we're still going to be talking about it for a long time to come. I will say, and this is me sort of shifting into American politics nerd mode, so everyone out there can just bear with me on this one, but I teach American government, and we talk about Madison in Federalist 10, who says, you know, the way to overcome the problem of faction is to have a society that's as diverse as humanly possible, but as many tiny little factions fighting each other so that none of them can ever claim a majority. And the immediate rejoinder to that is always, well, what about political parties? You didn't think about political parties. These two major behemoth factions of parties come along and throw his diversity of faction scheme out the window. But that's not true. Those two major parties are factions fighting factions fighting factions. We're seeing it here. You do something to accommodate one side, you lose the other side, you go the other way, and you lose half the people over here. And what really screws this whole system up is, and we're seeing this in House Bill 2, is the Hastert rule, which is we won't even consider bringing something to the floor for a vote unless we can get our entire caucus or a significant portion of our caucus on board with it. That's what prevents things from passing. That's probably, that might have been what prevented something from passing here. If it had been moderate Republicans working with Democrats, they might have been able to get something in House Bill 2. If it had been moderate Republicans working with Democrats, they could certainly get something passed, but they won't. They won't bring that up for a vote.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading an article that had an interview with Joe John, who is one of the new representatives in the House. And I know Joe John is former Judge John. Mm-hmm. He was on the Court of Appeals. And he also, as the article explained, has had a stint in the executive branch for a while, working in, I believe, the Department of Transportation. I can't remember. But they quoted him and kind of interviewed him as to his experience thus far in the General Assembly. And he was kind of noting the partisanship nature of it, but commenting that, you know, his experience in the judiciary of having non-affiliated, no party affiliation for so long, that it was very, he felt it very differently, and that he yearned for that kind of an atmosphere in the General Assembly, really, the less partisan, more just working together.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Carver Amerilletti Lavelle, and you just mentioned nonpartisan judiciary, that's now out the window as well, because the Republicans just overrode Cooper's veto on that.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the article was kind of speaking to that mm-hmm. He, in his view, it was better to not have those labels, because it really wasn't, it shouldn't be partisan, and it shouldn't be, maybe we'll never do away with that with statewide office and different other elections. But his point was the judiciary should be a little different.
Yeah, I still think it shouldn't be elected in the first place. I have my dog-eared copy of the Federalist Papers, and I read 10 and I read 78, and it's Hamilton saying, why are we electing judges? We want them to be independent and not have to worry about what public opinion thinks on this or that issue.
No, you know what? I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. Many years ago, the North Carolina Association of Women Attorneys, as well as many other groups, supported the notion of an independent judicial commission with a lot of representatives on it that would, vet and appoint judges to, and many, many, many states do that. I know Justice Sandra Day O'Connor was a big believer in that.
Yep. And on the federal level, of course, that is the way it is. And now we've got Neil Gorsuch, who's going through the Supreme Court. And I wanted to pick your brain on this because you're a law professor. you've got to have a take on Neil Gorsuch's nomination and what he will bring if and when he gets confirmed to the Supreme Court. What will he do to shape the nature of the court?
You know, I did actually get to hear a little bit of the Judiciary Committee questioning him the other day, and as has been the case with the last several nominees, very poised, very neutral sounding, mm-hmm. Very appropriate, a little bit of humor, nothing in general you see about a person like that. Not unlike, say, John Roberts, you know, being interviewed, or probably, you know, Justice Kagan or Justice Sotomayor. So on the surface, you know, I think the worst thing that Neil Gorsuch has going for him is being nominated this year because of all the anger and believing that someone else should be in that seat. And I was doing some reading on this that, you know, the question for the Democrats are, do they use the filibuster now or do they save it for the next nominee? Because we could very well have another nominee in the next 3 years, you know, cross fingers. But the question about that is, with this one, is Gorsuch, you know, better than Scalia or not in the Democrats' view? Who knows? You know, and you try to look at some of the cases he's ruled on and some of the speeches he made in the past before he got nominated for the Supreme Court, and it contradicts a little bit of what he said during the hearings. He sounded like an originalist a little bit, but then he talked a little bit about, you know, looking at it in light of today, which doesn't sound like anything that would have come out of Scalia's mouth. At the same time, you kind of wonder, well, is it just a one-up him for Scalia, and then let's, you know, wait on the next one to try to really get someone who's not going to be so bad, depending on who we're replacing. I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. It's like a chess game.
Yeah, it really is. And I've been reading up on the sort of behind-the-scenes politics of this. And again, like the politics of getting a judge onto a court is already sketchy to begin with. But the politics of the confirmation debate and the vote that's coming up, that Democrats are now sort of beginning to talk behind the scenes with Republicans and trying to strike a deal, will let Gorsuch through this time if you now pledge not to break the filibuster by changing the rules, if that should be an issue next time, which on the one hand I think is politically a great idea, if there's any indication whatsoever that Republicans wouldn't just change the rules next time anyway, and I don't know why they wouldn't.
Right. Well, you know, and I just said to you, we need to get through these 4 years, but actually we need to get through 3 years, because if something happens to a justice, all we have to do is say we need to wait 11 more months,
and
then we'll
have
whoever is elected get to choose the next nominee.
I wonder how that would play out if that were to happen. You know, Donald Trump would definitely not, or Mike Pence or Paul Ryan or however far down we are at that point, would definitely nominate someone. That would be an interesting debate. Speaking with Carper or Mayor Lydia LaVelle, and we got to wrap up here in a couple minutes, but let's go locally briefly, because Earth Hour is coming up for the town of Carrboro, but also for the Earth in general tomorrow evening. So 8:30 to 9:30, shut your lights out, right? To raise awareness of energy usage.
Yeah, this is just a kind of an annual event that the Worldwide Fund advertises, and just to make communities aware of climate change. You know, focusing on really having a collective statement, you know, of from as many municipalities around the world that can, to try to turn off their lights and pursue other actions, similar type actions, during this hour of Earth Hour. And if you go to their website, you can kind of read that last year's Earth Hour, you know, broke records of mass participation. Lots of countries, places that have landmarks or monuments, they'll turn off their lights. You know, we don't have any monuments in Carrboro, but you know, if you had a monument or landmarks, you know, climate petitions, signatures collected for those, a lot of social media hype. And so it's become really a symbolic event, you know, and one that is just really meant to raise awareness.
And that's again tomorrow night, 8:30 to 9:30. And before we let you go, I know we'll have a chance to talk with you between now and then, but coming up in 2 weeks, you're going to be speaking at an event on campus at the FedEx Center on being LGBT in North Carolina, but it's 14 different LGBT current and former elected officials that are going to be talking at this. So
Yeah, we did this several years ago, had a smaller gathering, but it was around actually a premiere of a documentary about running for office and being an elected official that was LGBT. But this will be a great gathering, especially in the current climate, and you know, especially hearing from folks who were in office, you know, not now, but several years ago, to hear how things have progressed, and then also to hear from new folks across the state who have been elected. I'm looking forward to it.
So you, Damon Siles, Mike Nelson, Mark Klatchmet, Lee Starrow, Jillian Johnson, is she going to be there?
Jillian Johnson,
I think,
will
so.
Be there, yep. Yeah. Cecil Brockman from the General Assembly. Yep. Deb Butler, maybe, from the General Assembly.
Stephen Petro is moderating.
Stephen Petro is moderating. LaWanna Mayfield from Charlotte, and some others. Alex Center, who used to be mayor. Anyway, there's a lot of us.
It's an increasingly large group, which is nice to see.
It's about all 12 of us.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, still, and then on the one hand, it's still a little bit frustrating that you can get them all together in a room, but at the same time, like 20 years ago or 25 years ago, the idea of an LGBT elected official from the Deep South would have been unheard of. And
no,
now,
it is. We're a good, hearty group. And,
yeah.
And the important thing is that, you know, we're the ones that identify as LGBT, but we have many, many, many straight allies across the state.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
That's great, too.
Carborough Mayor Lydia Lavelle, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.